I'm with William Denston Powell, former Liberal, Welsh Liberal Democrat, AM, would have been an MS if he was still there now. William, let's just start with the coronavirus, COVID-19. You have fallen victim to the virus, haven't you?
Yes, indeed, Alan. It's great to speak to you after a little while. I was hospitalized on the 26th of March, mm-hmm. Having been ill for a week or so before then, and was admitted on the advice of my GP to Neville Hall Hospital, which is about half an hour from here, sort of outside Powys and outside the Mid and West Wales region, but our closest DGH. And then within about 2 hours or so, I was under a ventilator and in an induced coma, from which I emerged some 2 weeks later. I spent 3 weeks all told in ICU, but the first two were in this induced coma and with a real struggle to keep going, really. And I owe my survival and my life to the skill of the clinicians and the medics, the nurses, and the whole fantastic team within the Welsh NHS that kept me going for that period. And then after 3 weeks in ICU, I had a further 3 weeks in a dedicated COVID rehabilitation ward, which was incredibly important for my recovery and to get me back to strength. And I left there some 3 weeks ago now, so I've been at home receiving some support from my GP surgery and from occupational therapy from the health board, and that is ongoing. But I'm remarkably well, considering what could have been, but I'm also incredibly aware of the 38,000 plus, and obviously it's a lot more than that, people in our country and across the UK who have not been as fortunate as I have in coming out the other end with this terrible virus. And I'm conscious of that every day.
The talk is really that once you go in with the symptoms, once you've contracted the virus and you're on a ventilator, there's basically goes down to a 50-50 chance of you coming out alive.
Yes, that is precisely what I have been advised after the event. I mean, I had no choice, really. It wasn't a negotiable situation when I went in, because I was my oxygen saturation levels were down to the low 70s, so I was in real danger. I'm told that my lips were starting to turn blue. I'd been ill for a week or so before then and had been confined to bed, more or less, and thought I was coming out, but obviously I was going into a further stage of relapse back on Thursday the 26th of March. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. That is roughly the stat that has been repeated to me by a number of people, and I think that's correct. It's quite sobering, really, to think about that. But it is an incredibly invasive and grueling process. But the skill that I referred to earlier in making the judgment calls as to which particular strategies to pursue with treatment is something that I shall be, you know, I shall always be grateful for, given the outcome which we have now.
And as you were diagnosed, or you discovered you had it, we get these sort of images in our heads of men in blue suits coming in and sort of taking you away and carting you off in isolation, and then maybe checking over anyone else you may have been in contact with or whatever. Can you just explain the system? Did any of that happen? I mean, is this what we're to expect now with the track and trace and the self-isolation and all these? A lot of people are still in the dark as to, like, this chap has just got COVID-19. He's in his home. He's in contact with his family. What happens next?
Well, I mean, there's two parts to answer that question, really. There certainly was no track and trace that was put in place with me back in late March and in April, I was tested and tested positive, and subsequently into early to mid April, when emerging from ICU, I tested negative. But at no time was any test undertaken with my wife or my sons or any other immediate contacts. But there wasn't at that point. I think that was consistent with national policy. There wasn't an initiative for track and trace back in late March and in early April. Clearly, that is what is being launched. I think obviously in Wales, it's been launched on Monday. There's some sort of attempt on the English side of the border to have that up and running already. But I'm somewhat unconvinced that it is adequate to the needs and that indeed that it's adequate to match the level of relaxation of lockdown. I think there's a lot of people across Wales who are somewhat concerned that the headlong rush to ease things in on the English side, which obviously there's some pressure that's felt here in Wales to follow suit in some quarters. I think there is a concern that is somewhat premature, given how given the potential weaknesses that exist in the track and trace, and certainly amongst some of the experts who belong to Sage, who've commented in the last 48 hours, have shared that scepticism.
There's been a lot of discussion and debate about the easing of restrictions and the way this has been handled, both internationally, nationally, locally, regionally. Looking at Powys, which has very low figures of cases of COVID-19, I did put it to the First Minister that perhaps they should be taking a more regional approach and looking at the R numbers for those regions and implementing those kind of lockdown rules and restrictions, whereby obviously, people from Powys would be free to travel within Powys because of the low numbers and the low R number, which is very different to the national level, different to the Welsh national level. Is that something that you would hold with, or as somebody who has this experience, you're probably the most qualified and experienced man at the moment in Wales to give any information on COVID-19, having had it, having been a teacher, having been pro-European, having been in the farming community? I mean, you tick all the boxes, William, to give us all the advice you can on what your view
is. I think you're over-editing a bit, Alan.
I think you're perfectly placed to give advice to the Welsh government.
Well, I mean, I'm very glad that I'm a resident of Wales, and that our government and no government has got any monopoly of wisdom. And I'm sure that every administration in the UK could be blameworthy of making some wrong calls along the way, but I'm very glad that we have had such a precautionary approach in recent times, both to the easing of lockdown as per the First Minister's statement a couple of days ago, or yesterday rather, and also issues around the cautious approach to the reopening of schools, which I'm supportive of. But I think there would be merit in a more localized approach, particularly looking at the R numbers, but we've also got to be cautious that we're following the correct data, because there's a serious discrepancy between the figures that we hear on a daily basis with the main television channels talking about 13 deaths across Powys. But my understanding is that the Office of National Statistics figures are closer to 85 deaths, and therefore we've got to make sure that we're comparing things on a correct basis, because I'm aware of certain individual care homes within the Powys area that have single-handedly lost a number that's probably not much less than the 13 that's quoted. think we need to make sure that we've got robust statistics and that everything's been taken account of, because there have been rather shifting sands across the UK in terms of the way the measures are taken. And I think the excess death figure is probably year on year is probably a helpful guide to what the actual figures are.
As a Welsh Liberal, ex or former Welsh Liberal Democrat, are you still politically active? I guess.
Oh, I'm very much still on board. I was president of our party until earlier this year, and still active as county councillor, and still seeking to be active at a wider level. Let's see what the future holds. But back to you. Sorry to interrupt.
No, these sort of restrictions of freedom of movement and sort of would be kind of alien, really, almost to your political way of life, political viewpoints, wouldn't they? How do you balance that with being a Welsh Liberal Democrat and sort of, going along with what some people are saying is kind of a governmental, move to restrict us to sort of practice and hone their skills almost. If you look at the conspiracy theories, and don't look at them that often, but if you do look at some of the stuff that's online, a lot of people are saying this has been sort of overdone a bit. And if we compare it to the flu or pneumonia or natural deaths, then really this isn't anywhere near as significant, other than the actual aggression of the virus itself.
Well, I mean, there's a whole lot wrapped up in that in that single question that you've just posed. Yes, it goes against the grain for somebody who calls himself a liberal and upholds the belief in the freedom of the individual to see the imposition of such draconian limitations on movement and on social contact and on the very essence of what makes our community in terms of the social, the sporting, the religious, just the richness of our communities. On the other hand, we've got to temper our commitment to liberalism and freedom of movement with a sense of responsibility. I do hold with the wisdom and the correct call that was made in terms of moving to lockdown. I mean, clearly, I think as I said in response to one of your earlier questions, I think we should be looking at a more localized approach. We should also be looking at an approach which reflects. It should be a risk-based approach. We also need to be looking at the reality of the situation in terms of the relative distances, and obviously the guide of 5 miles that's been brought in came in for some lambasting in some quarters, and it was a kind of easy hit because some of the early communications around it didn't really provide the level of reassurance that then came subsequently from the First Minister, that this is a guide rather than a hard and fast rule. But yes, a lot of this does sit uneasily, Alan, with being a liberal and believing in the individual's right to choose. But I think we need to be cautious looking at the output of some professional conspiracy theorists, because I think the reality of the suffering that we've seen across our communities and particularly disproportionately those communities which are scarred by deprivation and by poverty and so on, and that is also those communities have a right not to to suffer disproportionately as they have been up to now, and they will be in the front line if we have a subsequent flare-up of this deadly virus. Mm. I think we need to be aware of that. So that's part of the wider picture that we need to be cognizant of.
Were you surprised at the level of funding money that was thrown about and suddenly became available for many, many different areas, including education and health. Were you surprised at that level of funding that was found?
Well, I think we probably you and I both remember the Theresa May response to the question about the magic money tree. Well, I mean, it has been quite. It is quite phenomenal, the level of resource that's been made available by UK government and identified by Welsh government for these matters. Obviously, the single largest example of that is around the furlough scheme, and it is quite extraordinary to see a sort of fairly ideological right-wing conservative government engaging in supporting, initiating such a scheme. But I fear that as that is tapered and withdrawn in the second half of this year, we will face a level of economic crisis across the UK, which will probably be unmatched by anything that's been seen in this century or for the most part of the previous century. So I think it was correct that monies and financial support has been identified, but we need to be conscious that we are going to be going into very difficult times and we need to avoid the errors that I think crept in terms of the post 2008 response of unbridled austerity. That clearly is not a route through. But I am fearful for what comes in the second half of this year and in the first half of next.
We've spoken before on education, specifically on homeschooling and the way that homeschoolers had been treated across Wales, and the calls by Badman and others, Leighton Andrews, to sort of clamp down on homeschooling. And all of a sudden, homeschooling has become acceptable. Money again was poured into that. Children were said to have laptops and all sorts of resources. Parents were told, don't try and be a teacher, take it easy, don't worry, you know, just relax, do what's best for the child, and so on. Do you see, as I do, as a sort of a pro-homeschooler, really, some of the hypocrisy in what's been happening within educational circles? And are you concerned now for education in general in Wales?
Well, my overall view of the way in which the situation has been handled by my I have to declare an interest here, by my party colleague Kirsty Williams, the education minister, I've been considerably sort of impressed. I think a lot of other people have by her intuitive understanding of parents' dilemmas and of the challenges that are faced by parents the length and breadth of Wales. And I think she is conscious more acutely than I am of the differences that apply between those people who are able to dedicate the time and the energy and the commitment to homeschooling on the one hand, and the high proportion of pupils who probably almost definitely by surveys that I've heard and not able to receive that same level of support, whether it be because of absence of some of the hardware and some of the IT facilities and so on, but also perhaps because their parents or guardians are not as well versed and didn't have such a positive experience of education themselves, and therefore they're not at all well placed to provide that support. But I think the potential benefits of homeschooling in some settings will be better understood now than was the case before, but also the challenges that teachers face every day of the week, and I think probably the profession will have a degree greater respect in some quarters by those who've found themselves trying to deliver lesson plans and trying to enable an ordered progression of learning for their for the children in their care.
Given that this may continue for quite some time, even after the easing of restrictions, there are still concerns about children, about them returning to school, and how they are able to function properly. What kind of advice, would you be offering? What kind of strategies would you like to see being put in place in readiness for children returning to schools?
Well, I mean, I think the safety of pupils and staff is absolutely paramount, and that's why I'm relieved that we've had a more cautious approach across Wales than the 1st of June commitment that was made on the English side of the border. Clearly, I think we both understand that the social distancing doesn't come naturally to reception and year one and two pupils and all of the requirements that are in place to try to minimise risk. So we need to as parents. I mean, my children are older now, and the youngest is in year 12, so is in a different place. But we need to be supportive of colleagues in school settings who are trying to implement, are trying to have a phased return, or will in due time have a phased return, and be understanding. And that is going to be difficult when people are under pressure for childcare matters, and when there's greater pressure on people to return to their workplaces, and particularly at a time when they're not in a position to take advantage of support from grandparents and other community members who would perhaps earlier have played a part in childcare, which isn't going to be the case, at least in the short to medium term, for reasons we understand only too well. So I think it's having a degree of understanding and a degree of flexibility. But I realize that that's a very big ask at a time when everybody is many people are at the end of their tether in terms of the lockdown and its impact on them and on their lives.
Some of the political parties have been carping from the sidelines, been very highly critical of the Welsh government, saying that they're not really listening to anything from their input. You know yourself now, the Senate isn't sitting in reality, it's virtual meetings that they're having. And a lot of politicians very critical of that process, again, saying, look, we might as well be talking to ourselves here. They're just not listening. They're not taking the advice. You're in Powys, there's a very rural area, farming community and so on. What would you like to, how do you envisage things working in the Assembly, given that they may be going back at some point? What would you like to see the political approach being, given that we've had all these oppositions for so long? Do you think Wales now would benefit from this general coming together we've seen politically, whereby we set all these political differences aside and get on with a job of getting Wales back on its feet economically, educationally, health-wise, mental health, and all of these kind of things? Isn't it time to have some kind of one-party Welsh government and forget all the politics?
Well, I mean, that certainly in the days and weeks after my leaving ICU, and as I gradually pieced together the reality of the situation, and in the time since, I've been pretty intolerant of the sort of point scoring that I've seen, and of the opportunism that has come about, particularly things like the sort of the issues that surrounded the health minister with the portion of chips on the bench issue and so on, and some of the matters that that have arisen. I've just found very frustrating because they are distractions, you know. But I think we are in a time of real real crisis, and there is a need to set aside and to leave our guns at the door in terms of partisan concerns to the highest degree possible. I was a little bit disappointed, although I completely empathise with the concerns, for example, around the needs of rural areas and the need for flexibility. It was almost too easy to predict the press releases and the media lines and the social media output, perhaps of the Conservatives in the Welsh Parliament in the last couple of days. You could almost write it before the announcement had been made, because it was a kind of open goal in the way that it had been somewhat miscommunicated. And I think we do need a greater degree of coherence between people of goodwill and people who are concerned about the well-being of the people in Wales. But I would say, you know, we see on the UK government side a higher degree of partisanship than is the case here in Wales, and I find that very disturbing, really. And some of the issues that are driving the headlong rush towards what I think in some ways is premature and ill-founded release of lockdown isn't the result of discussions across party and drawing the best advice. It appears to me to be informed by a significant level of concern for partisan interests, maybe in some cases the concerns expressed by donors and by people whose best interests don't accord with those of the wider spectrum of the population. And I think, you know, we are in a time of national crisis, and I do believe in the need for a cross-party constructive approach and a reduction in the levels of bickering and easy hits.
In an old-fashioned farming term, sorting the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, absolutely right.
And looking at that in that way, you know, given that you've suffered with this virus and you've gone through that time, you've had time to think. What does go through your mind? You know, do you're in that position? Does religion go through your mind? Does your life sort of flash before you? Do you make plans? Do you make your peace with people? You know, what kind of things were happening to you on a mental level, given that mental health is so fragile anyway?
No, you're absolutely right there. I mean, I think I need to emphasize the fact that, you know, I was admitted within 2 hours. I was out for the count. So I was under a ventilator. I was in an induced coma. I didn't have any opportunity to make peace or put things in order with anybody at all. I do believe that I was subject to high degrees of support and prayers and all manner of different prayers and meditations across Christian, Hindu, Muslim, and other traditions, as well as people of no faith, who were willing me to recover. And because I've been told about it in subsequent weeks, and all that's quite moving, regardless of anybody's individual faith. But as I reflect on it, I realize how incredibly fortunate I was. And I must say, in ICU, I wasn't really in a position to engage with any of that for the reasons that I've stated, because I was out of it. In the second 3 week period, you do begin to reflect on how extraordinarily fortunate you've been, or I've been, or I was in that time, and I certainly had some some very valuable conversations with the hospital chaplain in Neville Hall Hospital, the Anarion Bevan Health Board chaplain, who came on a couple of subsequent successive Sundays, and who came to see me out of hospital on the day that I was discharged. But it certainly does make you reappraise your priorities, and I think probably it gives you cause to reflect as well on what really matters, and perhaps on sort of maybe stepping back from things that you can afford not to be engaged with, purely because you need to conserve your energies. And one thing I've not emphasized, I suppose, up to this point in the conversation, is the level of physical physical kind of debilitation associated with the treatment in ICU, because you have a muscle wasted, you have significant challenges, and obviously you may be aware of that through experiences that you or family or friends have had, but also anybody listening to this may well be aware of that. But I have to say, I wasn't aware of the severity of impacts and having to relearn to establish balance, having to relearn to walk in those early days, and still having some challenges in terms of stamina and dexterity. But I'm making progress thanks to the support that I'm still receiving from family, but also from the community services that have been made available from the local health board. But also, I need, at the end of the day, I need to take some ownership of this, and I'm trying to maintain a decent level of physical exercise and sustain that. And I've got nobody to blame but myself if I allow that to diminish. So I've got to keep going. But it's a combination, really, of mental, physical, and spiritual matters, all sort of wrapped up, really. And it is a profoundly arresting experience, and something that's the like of which I've never gone through in my now 55 years.
Therefore, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yes, indeed.
And you alluded to that in the 30-odd thousand you said, and people maybe are calling for now a national day whereby we commemorate this, almost like the Holocaust or something else. Do you think that's important as a way of people being able to stop, to think, to empathize, given that the majority of people may never, ever get to experience this, thank God, but... Do you think that's important, that we put aside some time on a day in the future for this?
I think that may well be appropriate. It's almost premature to make a judgment on that just now. But I think there would be merit in that. I mean, some of the newspapers, certainly I know some of the American papers on the East Coast have published sort of thumbnail photographs of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of victims of the virus, and that again has an impact. And I think it is really important to remember and to reflect on that, because obviously some of the quite a number of the victims have also contracted the virus through their day jobs and through their commitment to caring for other people. And of course, I mean, I'm sure you nor I have failed to be aware of the particular exposure to the virus that certain groupings in our country, certainly the AME community, which is particularly vulnerable, who are particularly vulnerable to the virus, and yet have put themselves in harm's way in their work for the NHS or in their caring professions or whatever. And I think, and also I was really haunted by the fact that weeks ago now, I heard a Transport for London spokesperson saying that they'd lost 29 bus drivers. And again, you just begin to think about these different categories of people, whether they're in care, whether they're key workers in different settings. And yes, I think it would be appropriate to do something of that kind, but I can't work out quite what form that should take. And I think we probably need to have a little bit of distance between this acute phase of the virus and this crisis and thinking how that should be done. But clearly something needs to be put in place, and we all need to reflect on the sacrifices and the losses that there have been.
The crisis has highlighted, super highlighted almost, the inequalities in society, specifically, as you alluded to there, the poorly paid people, the people on the front line. Is it your hope, is it your almost your will, really, that going forward, that all that we've learned from this will manifest in some leveling of society, some more equality, whereby those we know and we've described as in the media as the fat cats, the CEOs, you know, the big buck earners, sort of take a reality check here. The government takes a reality check here, and we actually do something about it, rather than say, there we are, it's all over with now, let's go back to as it was, and you just carry on with what you're doing.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Alan, because people talk about returning to normal. Well, we can't allow there to be just a lapsing back into the previous way of thinking. And this really has highlighted the stark differences. I mean, you alluded to POWIS earlier, and obviously in terms of the regions of that are represented in the Welsh Parliament, Mid and West Wales is by far the least impacted in terms of the statistics of the cases and in terms of death, and there is some correlation there between the occurrence of the virus and the socioeconomic conditions that apply in the region. But we absolutely must learn the lessons of this in terms of working towards a more just settlement, and whether that's the issue of paying care and healthcare staff more justly, because clapping on a Thursday has happened over many weeks now, and I think has concluded the other day. Clapping is great, and it's been heartening, and it's been well received. But clapping alone is not enough. No, absolutely, it doesn't put food on the table, and we need, and it's part. But it's part of a wider recognition, but that recognition needs to manifest itself in a different way. And of course, there've been calls from Sophie Howe, the Future Generations Commissioner, and from a number of parties and individuals in the various Welsh parties and beyond. There's been a call for consideration and trialling of a universal basic income, and I think that may well have merit. I know it's complex, and I know its resourcing would be difficult, but I think we need to give some serious thought to whether or not that is a way forward, and I think it needs to be considered seriously, because there are basic needs that are currently going to be very, very difficult to meet. And I referred earlier to my fears about the kind of economic depression that could be set to follow the withdrawal of the furlough and the other support schemes. And I think that the challenge that we face is going to be an enormous one, but it is going to need fresh thinking and a fresh commitment. And I think that's also tied in with what you were referring to earlier of of a greater meeting of minds of people of goodwill rather than sort of narrow partisan interest, because you're never going to deliver the kind of change that's required if you're constantly preoccupied by your individual vote share and by the tight demands of the electoral cycle, which because the elections come around so frequently that it makes it very difficult to make tough but necessary decisions.
And we know a lot of families, a lot of businesses are going to be really badly affected by this. A lot more poverty, a lot more domestic violence. We've just seen a lot of the negative stuff. Would you like to see, going forward again, this kind of meeting to a certain extent? Will you be campaigning? Will you be helping or advising or sort of sending missives to Kirsty Williams and others within the government to say, look, you know, what we need to do here is not sort of go and say, okay, it's all over. This has cost us an absolute arm and a leg. We're now going to have to rake that back somehow and so forth. So therefore, we're going to have to sort of raise the council tax. And all of a sudden, again, those people have come out of this the hardest hit, are having to struggle against all the odds again, whereas there is a potential here, there is a turning point here, there's a pivotal point here where local authorities could say, do you know what, maybe we are top heavy on people here at the top, maybe we can take, looking across the board across Wales as politicians, take a cut in the wage, do things differently, stay at home a bit more and do work in a different way in order to save that money and avoid penalizing, you know, the poorest.
Well, I think we've certainly seen some positive developments in terms of the way in which local government has moved towards, obviously has had to move towards virtual meetings, which are more cost effective, which is one strand. Also an area that of additional potential benefit obviously is around environmental impacts of some of the ways in which we've done business, of always having to drop sticks and meet at some mutually inconvenient venue rather than doing as you and I are doing now, having quite an in-depth conversation where we're a significant distance apart and yet we're able to communicate effectively. I think we do need to have fresh thinking in that respect. And also one of the great things that I'm quite optimistic about is that the way in which Welsh government is seeking to take forward the track and trace is going to recognize the contribution that local government has got to play, because local government, local councils, through environmental health and other functions that have been stripped back through expenditure cuts over time, they've got a very important role to play in delivering an effective track and trace, and we need to be alert to that. And I think that's really important. And it could be in the middle distance that we could have a greater role and a greater devolution of power down to town and community councils, because that's the level at which people really engage with their communities and really know what's going on. I think that's important, but that's got to be matched by a thinning out at the top level, as you said. And I think we may need to have rationalization there, and perhaps also a more mature and grown-up approach to the potential need for reform of local government, which has been a political football since years before we ever met, and it keeps on rolling down the road without a whole lot of action. So I think we need to take stock and consider, as I said earlier in a different context, what really matters and what's essential and what's just a nice to have, or rather something that we're just used to and just keep on running with it rather than thinking about how things may need to change in the future.
Goes back to a very liberal attitude again, which is giving the power back to the people, taking the power decision making back to the region, yeah, to the local level. And a lot of people have been championing that. William, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and I wish you all the best. I'm so glad that you've pulled through. And I would love to see you back in politics. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm very grateful for your encouragement, and I'll take that on board. It's been really good to speak again and catch up, Alan, on a range of matters, and I hope we can continue to do so. I mean, it's a curious thing that it's coming within an inch of your life and getting caught up with this terrible virus that's been the impetus to re-engage across Wales with friends in the local and regional media. But I think that's one of the positives I can take from this. The opportunity now that I sense a real urgency to give something back, and so I might take your advice on board.
I look forward to it. Thanks very much for speaking to me, Diolch yn fawr I chi gyd.
No, croeso cynnes. Okay.